ते भारत अध्युथानं मधर्मशं तदात्मानं श्रीजाम्यहम् परित्राणाय साधुना विनाशाय च दुष्कृता धर्म संस्थापना हरेर्नाम कलौ नास्त्येव 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 गतिरन्यथा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण एंड वेलकम टू दिस वीकली कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस प्रोग्राम. And once again, I would like to invite all the listeners to the Hare Krishna Temple, which is the 1229 Coatesville Riverhead Highway, also known as Highway 28. And at the temple, every Sunday, we hold a special public program starting at 11:30 with bhajans and kirtans, followed by aarti of their lordships at 12:30, and a discourse on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness from 1 to 2. And we finish up the day's program with the aarti of our Foundacharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, followed by Vegetarian Feast at 2:30. Please come along, join us, and find out for yourself what is Krishna consciousness all about.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
I'll continue with a story of Ramayana. Remember last week we stopped at where Vishwamitra was taking Ram and Lakshman to Janakpur, King Janak's palace. In the early morning hours, Vishwamitra proceeded with Ram and Lakshman to King Janak's palace. At the palace, everyone was awaiting the arrival of the king. King Janak, after performing his morning obligations, headed straight to the courtroom. His elephant gait seemed to match the rhythm of the drums and beats, ushering him into the courtroom. As he inched closer to his throne, the beats rose to a crescendo, filling the palace up with a thunderous sound. The palace rumbled as the King Janak slowly walked up to his throne to take his seat. As Vishwamitra, Ram and Lakshman were about to enter the palace, they lifted their heads to take a look at the sky-kissing dome of the structure. The palace stood so tall that its dome peaked peak seemed to touch the slow fading moon from the previous night. As the glowing Vishwamitra stepped into his courtroom, his mentor Satanand's narration of the previous evening came flooding back to Janak. He could visualize the sage going through the severe austerities to become the effulgent Brahma Rishi he was now. He was so proud to have the great Vishwamitra in his palace. He requested Vishwamitra to express his desire. Vishwamitra asked King Janak to show the bow to the two brothers. Janak agreed, but first he wanted them to know the story behind the bow and how it reached Mithila. Long ago, Vishwamitra, the celestial architect, Vishwakarma, the celestial architect of the demigods, had used all his creative powers to construct two bows of unlimited strength and fortitude. He presented one with each to Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva had used his to kill the demon Tripurasur. The idle demigods wished to test which of the two was stronger. They approached Lord Brahma to arrange a duel between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. Lord Brahma could foresee a calamitous future where this duel to go in till the end. He warned the demigods of the dire consequences with the fight to ensure, but the demigods disregarded his warning. He manifested a difference of opinion between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu so that they enter into a fight. Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva did not want to fight, but they relented at the demigod's persistence. But when the fight began, neither wanted to be the one to lose. The hair-raising duel took such a devastating, universe-threatening turn that the demigods began to worry. The demigods had not foreseen this. During the duel, Lord Vishnu let out a menacing war cry and deafening the demigods to semi-unconsciousness. Now extremely apprehensive about the existence of the universe, they rushed to the two warring lords and prayed that they stop their contest. The lords agreed. Both Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva had their bows with them till each gave it away to someone else for safekeeping. Daksha was the demigod responsible for the creation of living beings in the universe. He was also the father of Sati, wife of Lord Shiva. Sati loved Shiva, but Daksha did not really like him because he did not think the ash-smeared Shiva was who wore skulls and snakes and visited graveyards was the right match for his daughter. Sati spurned him to marry the ascetic god. His pride was so wounded that he performed a yajna where he invited everyone except Lord Shiva and Sati. Sati went nonetheless and wanted an explanation for not being invited. Her father insulted her husband and said the yajna was no place for an ascetic such as him. Humiliated, Sati burned herself into ashes. Lord Shiva was so hurt and angry that he went to Daksha and in the presence of all the demigods at the yajna, he threatened to sever Daksha's head with the bow Vishwakarma had gifted him. The demigods begged for forgiveness and pleaded with Lord Shiva to hand his bow over to them. The kind-hearted Lord Shiva was quick to anger, yet quick to forgive too. So he handed over his bow to them, who in turn gave it to King Devarta, the sixth descendant of King Nimi, the founder of King Janak's dynasty. Meanwhile, Lord Vishnu too handed his bow over to Richika Rishi, who in turn gave it to his son Jamadagni, who passed it on to his son Parshuram. By the time Janak finished narrating the breathtaking tale of the bow, the two princes were aching to see it. The crowd, too, awaited in anticipation. Janak shifted his attention from the boys and Vishwamitra to the job at hand. Everyone understood that the moment had arrived. They would all get to see the magnificent long bow in full splendor. Janak ordered his soldiers to wheel in the bow to the assembly. His army marched out to the adjacent building where the bow was kept. Was an army needed to get the bow? The bow was extremely heavy, and wheeling it into the courtroom was a back-breaking task. It took nearly 5,000 able-bodied Maithila men with elephant-like bodies and rock-solid arms to push the cart pulled by 500 mighty bulls to bring it into the court. Perhaps the palace, where the bow was kept for so long, felt relieved. As long as last, the weight was off its aching back. Alas, the ache shifted to a new place, Janak's court. The backs of these strong, gigantic men seemed to curl under the weight of the bow as they tried to lift it and place it at the center of the courtroom. An anxious buzz spread through the courtroom. Some Maithilis began speculating that the bow was Mount Meru itself. Some others thought it was Mount Mandra, which was used to churn the ocean. Yet others thought it was a rainbow that had fallen in from the sky. The rainbow analogy did not seem very far from the truth. As the bow became visible, bright colors reflected off its surface and it radiated a beautiful aura. The elephant skin and tiger skin covers along the bow curves added to the exotic charm of the wonderful bow. Everyone was mesmerized by its grandeur. Janak's faith and appreciation for the formidable bow was renewed when he witnessed the Herculean effort it took to wheel it in. He told Vishwamitra how the bow was worshipped every day in Mithila, adorned with the most fragrant sandalwood paste and flower garland, because no one in Mithila was qualified enough to use the bow. All they could do was worship it. Never once taking his eyes off the bow, Janak told his guests that no one had been able to lift this bow since it was brought to Mithila. Not even the great demigods, Grand Horvers and Kinkaras. Janak fought back his tears at the thought of no one being capable of lifting the bow. He became emotional because he was the father in pain, bearing the agony of being unable to give away his daughter in marriage. Only the one who could lift the bow could marry Sita. It had been years and no worthy suitor had come by the Mithila to claim his daughter. Many Maithilis began whispering about Janaka's foolhardy decision to keep such an impossible condition for his daughter's hand. Though old Janak heard those comments and began doubting it if he had any intelligence at all. Perhaps it was not that foolish. Now that Ram was here and so was Vishwamitra, Janak had become optimistic. He decided to reveal the tumultuous secret that beat within his throbbing heart to Vishwamitra, something he had kept from even his dearest friends. Janak began narrating to Vishwamitra about his decision to marry Sita off to only the one who could lift and string Lord Shiva's bow. At the back of his mind, Janak had his hopes pinned on Vishwamitra to encourage Ram to lift the bow, and he hoped narrating this story about the precondition to Sita's marriage could actually make his desire come true. Janak went on to narrate that the moment he had made the announcement, hundreds of kings and princes and even extraterrestrial personalities lined up to try their hand at lifting the bow in the hope of marrying the lotus-eyed princess. Every single one of them failed. The suitors, unable to even budge the bow, began to accuse Janak of cheating them and trying to insult them by exposing them to ridicule. They were convinced none could lift that bow, not even Lord Shiva, and this was merely Janak's attempt to run them down. Some of the kings were so offended that they banded together and decided to attack Mithila city. Mithila was now under siege from all corners. Janak's soldiers tried all they could to protect the city from the attack. Unfortunately, Janak was rapidly losing men and wealth in this serious battle. He had very few options left, so he requested the demigods for help. They were only too happy to oblige and hence sent their armies to Mithila and helped defeat the attacking suitors. This victory over the suitors was not enough to convince the Mithilas of Janak's wisdom. Sita was their dear princess, the most beautiful and able girl in the entire world. Yet here, Sita was languishing without a groom because of her father's insane precondition. Each time they saw her, they could not help but discuss Janak's folly. Was he really a fool? Janak would often ask himself the same question, but the self-doubt would last only until the recollection of this startling incident from the past. A young Sita had been playing ball with her friends. The flower ball she was playing with rolled into the room where the bow was. She ran into the room in search of her bow. Searching frantically for it around and under the bow, she finally located it under the bow, almost as if it was as light as a feather. With her left hand, she lifted the bow, and with her other hand, she picked up the bowl. Then she put it back in place as if she had just lifted paper off the floor. Sita then went back to her gaping friends who had been watching everything all the while. The friends, still astounded by what had transpired, rushed to King Janak with the news. Stunned as he was, Janak decided that if his girl was so miraculously strong, there was no doubt in his mind that one to marry her must match her strength, even if he were unable to lift the bow as effortlessly. He should at least be able to lift it anyway and string it. A precondition thus took birth, a precondition that with time had begun tightening like a noose around Janak's neck. Not everyone knew of Sita's ballroom feat, especially those who ridiculed him. The king was mute through the mockery. He knew better. At least he hoped he knew better. Through countless silent prayers and countless mental battles to continue backing his judgment and decision, Janak just wished he was not wrong. For the sake of his daughter and for the sake of his citizens, Janak looked awfully at Ram. He then turned to Vishwamitra and suggested that if Ram were to lift the bow and string it, he could win the hand of the beautiful Sita. Or would it be wiser to just hand Sita over to Ram without making him go through the bow lifting exercise? Considering he was the most eligible by far and had come from such a distant land, of course, there lay this possibility that Ram would fail to lift the bow and Sita would remain a spinster all her life. But there was also the strong possibility that he would be victorious and Janak's precondition would be a success, in that it would have helped find the right man for Sita. Either way, Janak was willing to take this calculated risk. Vishwamitra's presence encouraged him to take a leap of faith. Lord Ram courted challenges. Besides, he too wanted to win Sita's hand, although he was not yet quite sure if she was the one he had spotted in the balcony and lost his heart to. If this was the only way to have the girl he could not stop thinking about, then he was not going to give up without trying. After a long, hard look at the bow, he turned toward Vishwamitra. He wanted his master's approval to take a closer look at the bow. With Dasharatha absent, Vishwamitra took on the mantle of the father. The Brahma Rishi had been waiting for this moment for quite a while now. He promptly agreed, showered his blessings and gave Ram permission to access the bow. Ram then walked up to Vishwamitra, touched his feet, and sought empowerment and began walking towards the bow. Silence fell over the courtroom. The audience escaped a beat with every step he took towards the bow. Ram was confident, personified. His gait had the power of a lion, Simhagati, and rage of a tiger, Vagragati, the pride of a bull, Rishabhagati, the majesty of an elephant, Gajagati, and the latent energy of a snake, Sarpagati. It seemed as if Ram embodied the spirit of each of these wild creatures. For the first time in all these years, everyone present in the courtroom was convinced that Ram would accomplish the impossible. As Ram stood near the bow, he imagined it to be Sita's necklace. Once again, his mind raced back to the balcony. Surely the girl he was to marry now after lifting the bow was the same girl he had seen on the balcony and fallen so deeply in love with. Ram shook himself back to the present and the task at hand. He gazed at the bow one last time, reminisced about his greatness and his association with Lord Shiva, and circumambulated it thrice, hands folded, head lowered with respect. Back in position, he looked at Vishwamitra and asked for permission to touch it. Vishwamitra nodded. Ram was ready. He extended his arms, gripped the middle of the bow, and again turned towards his teacher for permission to lift it. By this time, everyone had their hearts in their mouths. Excitement, anticipation, and hopes had peaked. Anything was possible now. They soaked in every single moment through their eyes like a drunk would if I, the last drop in the pitcher. Not for anything did they want to miss any part of the action. They all sat immobile, unblinking in rapt attention. Everyone's breath was held, their lungs constricted, their hairs throbbing. Ah, the suffocation of anticipation. Lord Ram was all focused. The bow began being the only thing on his mind. He tightened his grip on it. A chorus of gasps filled the air as he lifted it off the casket elegantly, gently and effortlessly as an elephant lifts a lotus from a lake. The bow had been lifted. Even before everyone could observe the shock of what they saw, Ram had erected the bow on the ground. With his right hand held down the bulbous tip, with his left big toe, pulled down its top with his left hand and strung it. The entire task was completed in crackling speed. All of it happened so fast that none could understand how he lifted the bow or when he strung it. Even as they wondered how everything happened so fleetingly, a deafening sound rent the air. The majestic bow of Lord Shiva, the pride of Mithila, had snapped right in the middle. Everyone bearing Ram, Lakshman, Janak, and Vishwamitra dropped unconsciously, unable to bear the thundering sound. It was almost as if the mighty bow was letting out a cry that reverberated through the entire universe. Across the universe, everyone dropped everything trying to trace the source of the rippling sound. Ram, with two broken pieces of bow in his mighty hand, stood there innocently, as if he had done nothing extraordinary. "Bravo!" jumped up a beaming Janak. "Thank God! What a proud moment for Janak! Ram had saved his face, prestige and fame. he was so overwhelmed with emotion that he could not find the right words to express his joy. Bursting at the seams with happiness, he brought forth his wealth and donated generously to the needy, who were like white clouds absorbing water from a sea full of surging waves. So we stop there and have a kirtan.
Hari Govinda,
Hari
Keshava, Hari Govinda,
Hari
Narayana, Hari
Govardhana Giri Varadhare